is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. And, excuse me, our guest the last hour today is Mark R. Elsis. That's E-L-S-I-S. He is an environmentalist, a filmmaker, a poet, a web entrepreneur, a developer, a writer. He wears a lot of hats. And so, Mark, welcome to the program. And his website, websites, loveearth.net, network.loveearth, depopulation.org, overpopulation.net. He's got, hundreds of websites. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me back on, Deanna. And it was a great interview with James. It's I've published quite a few pieces this year, or in the last year and a half since we've talked on air. The last piece was a 53-page paper called A Violent Insane Asylum, and that's at googlecensorship.com. Since on March 7th, March 8th, 2017, Google redid their algorithms and censored not only all of my work, but of many, many people's work that are trying to bring forth the truth on matters that I guess you could call our enemies don't want people to be able to decipher for themselves. And so I said, GoogleCensorship.com is still open. That would be nice. Let's see if they can sue me. Trying to provoke them, actually. And I've also put together, I wrote poems for 20 some odd years, and I had 910 poems, and then I just stopped writing them on November 11th, 1998. And so I put together the top 144 poems, and I put them on a site called resonatelove.net. Yes, I have a lot of websites. I had the audacity to build the largest network of internet sites in the world. When people were creating one website and begging for money, not that I put them down for that, but a lot of people had money and they're begging for money. I created over 1,000 top-level domain names with content, because when I foresaw the internet as the last bastion of free speech back in early 1997. And I said to people right then, I said, if we have 20 years without the boot coming on our neck, the censorship boot, then we'll be lucky. And people were looking at me like I was very strange. And I was right. 19 years and 9-10 months later, the censorship happened for good. And I created this network, vision of this network, because it was the last bastion of free speech. I've been put on this planet to put forth the narrative that we are about to go extinct as a species. I'm probably one of the top people on the planet that knows about this, the science called carrying capacity, and has been espousing it all my adult life. And people have told me all sorts of nonsense, knowing nothing about it, that, you know, you're crazy, Mark, you're this, you're that, you're genius, but you're nuts, and you're blah, 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 blah. I've heard it all. And yet here we are, on May 25th, 2019, and things have gone from bad to worse to it's now even almost your normal person understands that things are not going to last the way we're doing it. And you know, I my first major piece when I went from poetry to writing was it was called Rainforest Biodiversity Scale of Destruction, where I put all the numbers together, and I came out and I said there has to be at least 93 species going extinct every day, and I was laughed at. I mean, biologists and all sorts of people came at me and just said, "You're nuts. You're crazy. You're what are you? What are you? You don't have any degree," and on and on. And they were espousing at the same time, perhaps one or two species going extinct per day. And I said in my paper, it could be up to 1,600, but it has to be at least 93 from the four major variables. There's a lot of difference between 93 and 1,600, I understand, but it had to be at least 93, and it could have been up to 1,600. And so I was just laughed at. And then, you know, starting about 7-8 years later, I started hearing major biologists say, there's more than 100 species going extinct today. And then about a few years after that, everybody's on board with saying there's at least 200 species going extinct per day. So I sort of found it rather funny that, you know, a decade or so before this, when I wrote about it, I was laughed at. And the same thing went with my second study on overpopulation, and our numbers were crashing. And they've changed all the numbers, by the way, on both rainforest mass species extinctions and the population numbers. Totally changed the numbers. And by the way, the making of another life form to go extinct is the number one sin of the universe. And we're doing it willy-nilly, as if there's no ramifications, as if we're not part of this unbelievably intricate millions, perhaps a billion different life forms to create what we have here. And we're just ripping it apart for what? For tomorrow's profit? And so I went and started creating site after site after site, and, you know, probably most known maybe for my 9/11 work, because I was one of the first writers in the world, if not first writer in the world, that said Israel was behind 9/11. And for that, I got my phone tapped and was followed around, and my friends were questioned. And so it's the same thing when I ran somebody for president of the United States. His name is Jerry Brown. I ran him in late 94. You know, got the committee, did everything, ran it, was going to run him independent, and I got infiltrated right away by the CIA. And the same thing happened with my film, Strawberry Fields. It's amazing that I had the audacity to go up to Strawberry Fields in Central Park, New York, and ask people, do you think John Lennon was assassinated? If so, why and by whom? And 29 years later, when I put my film out, Strawberry Fields, Keeping the Spirit of John Lennon Alive, at strawberryfields.net, all of a sudden, all different things started happening to me, including my trailer that I put out on January 13th, 2009. Within 3 months, it had 425,000 views. It was going viral. And today, it has 426,000 views. So it's sort of like the poster boy for censorship was my trailer. So they just stopped the numbers and took it out of circulation, more or less, back. And this is 10 years ago. So maybe I was wrong by saying it within 20 years, because it happened within, you know, 12 years in that respect to me. So it was because they didn't want, I had the audacity, once again, to put on, in film, was John Lennon assassinated? If so, by whom and why? And I show all these other people, of course, that were assassinated, which is, you know, brings me back to my latest piece, which I've been meaning to write for the longest time, and it's 53 pages, A Violent Insane Asylum. And it's about my first 10 years and 5 months on this planet. And then in the sort of the second half of it, which is a lot shorter, it's from June 8th, 1968 till today, on the last, you know, 51 years. And what I saw in the first 10 years and five months of my life, it was on the night of June 8th, 1968, when I was going to sleep, 2 days after Bobby Kennedy, well, 3 days after he was shot and 2 days after he died. And it was that day, June 8th, 1968, where they had the funeral at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. I'm from New York, and I'm Irish Catholic. And then they had the train ride, the funeral procession train ride from bringing his body down to Washington and to be next to his brother in Arlington, it made me so sad. I couldn't believe it. It was, I wrote a piece about it a long time ago called the day the United States died. And it was, and so that night going to sleep, I was profoundly sad. And I look back in my whole life, and this, by the way, this inkling first came to me on November 22nd, 1963.
Wow.
The day they assassinated our president. And so it took me less than 5 years to figure out, you know, I saw John F. Kennedy get assassinated, Malcolm X get assassinated brutally in New York. Martin Luther, I lost faith in the Catholic Church because my Cardinal Spellman, who was the top, not only in New York, but top person for Catholicism in the United States. And I saw him as a seven-year-old boy. I started seeing him in early 65 being a cheerleader for the Vietnam War. And I went to myself, wait a second, I'm learning in my catechism classes that thou shalt not kill, you know, big number six on the top 10 list. And so I realized, and then I went to Mass for the first time on Palm Sunday. It was April 3rd, 1968. And my mom gave me 2 bits, otherwise known as a quarter. And I dressed in my Easter Sunday best a week early, and I went to Palm Sunday Mass for the first time by myself in our little Catholic church, Ascension, in Elmhurst, Queens, was just like 3 blocks away from where I lived. And I remember the guy comes in with the, you know, collection basket and puts it down the aisle, and I threw my quarter in, and then 10 minutes later, he's coming for the collection again. And I went to myself, oh my God, I felt so ashamed. I don't have anything to give. And then I realized, my God, wait a second. I gave more than I had the first time. Why would they come back and ask again? And so I realized right away, something behind this is greed. And it's not good. So these two things, that, and it was on that day, April 3rd, 1968, that I gave up the Catholic religion per se, even though I did go, I was confirmed, and I went to, you know, Mass that I had to. I also went to the oldest Catholic high school in the United States, LaSalle Academy. But I never truly believed in what the Catholic Church was doing from that day on. And then years later, I find out, my sister sent me an article from the New York Times, of all places, where it said Cardinal Spellman, his mother's father was a rabbi. And so I went, my God. So I realized this guy was a warmonger when I was 7 years old. And by the way, I was just keeping this to myself until it was like early 1968 when my mom and I were having dinner, and Cardinal Spellman came on some news show and was once again espousing, come on, boys, go to Vietnam. And I went to my mom, who never said anything bad about anyone in her life. I said, Mom, Cardinal Spellman is saying to go to kill. And I'm learning my catechism, thou shalt not kill. And she goes, the book is right and he's wrong. And so that opened me up to free me to say, oh my God, I was right for the last year, knowing this inherently. So it was, and then you have, in April of 1968, I'm seeing all this war all about me. I'm seeing, you know, my president get assassinated, Malcolm X get assassinated, the Catholic Church and Spellman are just totally hypocritical warmongers. And then I'm saying, where's all the people for peace? What's going on in this world? This is crazy. And then I came upon Dr. Martin Luther King, who gave this speech on April 4th, 1967 at Riverside Church in New York. It's called Beyond Vietnam. And so he was the first major person that I saw come out in very strong terms against the Vietnam War. And then 24 days later, on April 28th, 1967, you had the heavyweight champion of the world, Muhammad Ali, come out and saying, I'm not going over to fight and kill people. They're not calling me nigga. You be calling me nigga. And why am I going to go and fight for you to kill some other people? I'm not going to go kill for you. And I was like, whoa. So here are two black men. Now, major black men that have come out against the war, and look what happened. A year later after that, the speech Beyond Vietnam, exactly 1 year later, they assassinate Martin Luther King. And, he's one of the greatest orators perhaps ever. And where did they shoot him? These evil, and I used to have a site, evil.com. For it, they shot him in the mouth.
Oh.
They could have shot him between the eyes. Nobody realizes this kind of stuff. the depth of the evil is just beyond the pale. So you have, and what did they do to Muhammad Ali? They stripped him of his heavyweight title. He wasn't allowed to fight for over 4 years, and on and on. But he stood up. These two men stood up. And then I said, well, where are the white guys? Huh? And I finally saw the first major white guy come out, which was on Sunday, June 25th, 1967, in a show called Our World, which was the first TV satellite link up to the world. And some 400 to 700 million people watched this. And John Lennon specifically wrote the song All You Need Is Love for this show. And that was a profound moment for me at just 9 years and like 9.5 years old almost. And I saw now John Lennon comes out and says, All You Need Is Love. And I went, oh my God, there are people. And of course, we all know what happened to John Lennon 13 years later. And I was there. I was there for the longest that anybody was there. And I swore in his blood, I'm going to change the world. I don't care if they have to shoot me in the back. So you have, and then you have, you know, Bobby Kennedy. By the way, and here's something I came across with when I was writing The Day the United States Died, is that Lyndon Johnson came on TV on March 31st, 1968, and said, I'm not running for re-election. I don't want the Democratic nomination. I'm out of here. What happens at that moment is what is called a lame duck presidency, and it's a power vacuum in Washington where things happen. And what happened, what I stumbled upon happening was this. And 4 days later, after LBJ says, I'm out of here, they assassinate Martin Luther King. 62 days later, they assassinate Bobby Kennedy. And so this first 10 years and 5 months of my life, when I was going to sleep on June 8th, 1968, profound sadness, I finally came to the conclusion, I'm living in a violent, insane asylum. And the only other person I ever heard say, I'm living in an insane asylum, was the late John Anthony West, bless his soul, who was an Egyptologist that was ridiculed for many things, but he was a real smart guy, and I was proud to know him a little bit. So this is what the violent, insane asylum was about, and I pull no punches in what I've done from anything. I have a document called Almost Died. I've almost died 16 times in this life. And so I've, like Martin Luther King said in his famous speech the night before he was assassinated, I climbed the mountaintop speech, and where he says like 5-6 times, he alludes to, I'm out of here, I'm dead, you're going to have to carry on after me. But he says, I fear no man. And by the way, John F. Kennedy knew he was dead man walking, and he did what he did. Malcolm X knew he was dead man walking, and did what he did. Martin Luther King knew he was dead man walking and did what he did. Bobby Kennedy, deep down, knew he was dead man walking and he did what he did. John Lennon thought he'd get away with it and he didn't. So you have these major people in our life that have all just been taken out. And somebody like Malcolm X, who was a real, he went from being a real, like almost degenerate, I guess you could call him, into becoming quite a great man in many respects. And so it just, and this has happened, and I go into the last line in the Violent Insane Asylum is this: we are all living in a violent insane asylum, overwhelmingly brought to us by Jewish financial elites that now control almost everything. The price that we will soon pay for looking the other way and letting this rape and pillage to exist will be our own extinction. And so this is, and I, right before that, I put this in other pieces. Voltaire, it's a longer quote, but I'll just read. Voltaire understood this threat that the Jews posed to the survival of humanity 248 years ago. He wrote this in 1771, and I'll just read the last two lines. I would not be in the least bit surprised if these people would someday, I would not be in the least bit surprised if these people would not someday become deadly to the human race. And so when I stumbled upon that, I was amazed that this man could figure this out in 1771. So this is why. Hello?
Yeah,
did we go to commercial?
Are we in a commercial?
I think we are.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Currency, no child left behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down. Vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, we are back. Our guest this last hour today is Mark R. Elsis, and that was undoubtedly the best soliloquy that I've ever heard, and I mean it in the best possible way. I'm stunned.
I just heard something about in harmony in that song.
Yes.
And
I love that song.
Here's a coincidence. Here's one of my poems that I wrote on February 2nd, 1980. It's called Forever in Harmony. It's make or break one more time. Will we cover ourselves in our prime? Or learn to live as meant to be? Back with nature. Forever in harmony. Which we choose is up to us. Either we fuse or forever rust. But now's the time to make the choice, and only together we'll find they'll hear our voice. to make the changes that have to be for us to live forever in harmony. It's one of my favorites.
And I can see why.
So, Deanna, I started getting wise to our dear friends, as I call them, because they like euphemisms, and what 9/11 did. Let me back up. I was brought up in Elmhurst, Queens, New York City. Elmhurst had the distinction of, when I was being grown up there, to be the most ethnically diverse neighborhood on earth. And I more or less got along with everyone. And my father took me out to unbelievably many places every Sunday, because my mother and my father divorced and separated in 65 and divorced in 66, 67. And I would go out with him every Sunday, and he would take me out to plays and all sorts of culture. And he had a lot of Jewish friends. And I was going to say this on your show one time, and I stopped myself, but I'll say it now. One of his friends was Mel Weinberg. I saw that film, what is it called, American what? Hustle? And I didn't see it. And I read about it, and it was up for Academy Award. And I started reading this article, because I don't pay attention to their films anymore. And I said, no, that was Mel Weinberg. I know him. Who set up the whole ASCAM and that whole thing. And it was up for the Academy Award, and it was Mel. But my father had just a lot of Jewish friends. And he even married a Jewish woman, who, by the way, is a very nice woman. But when I brought up John F. Kennedy to her and who did it, she turned Jewish on me, which was real interesting. And I've known her for forever, huh? Since 1971. I would start meeting these Jewish people, being more exposed, being going out into Manhattan, and I started realizing, my God, these people, I didn't at first realize it at, 7, 8, 9 years old. I didn't get it that they were Jewish. I just realized, what the hell's the matter with them? What kind of supremacist attitude are they giving me? And my father brought me up to be, don't be intimidated by anybody or anything. And he installed that in a minute conversation inside the Plaza Hotel in Manhattan one afternoon, when I was in awe of the surroundings as like an 8-year-old boy. And and I never forget it. But so I just started bumping into all of these Jewish, mostly Jewish men who were overtly supremacist. And I couldn't believe it. And was brought up in the most ethnically diverse neighborhood on earth, and nobody else acted like this. So this is like the Emperor's New Clothes type of thing. I wasn't prejudiced. I didn't have any knowledge of this. I just realized what was sort of like Cardinal Spellman being a cheerleader for the Vietnam War. And so it just grew on me from that. Then I drove a taxi in New York for a long time, and I'm writing a book called Meetings and Stories, which I'm halfway through, by the way. I have 35 different episodes down from all the different things I've done in my life. And, people think I'm what a braggarty or whatever, but I've reached for the golden ring. Yeah, I ran somebody for president of the United States. I threw rallies in front of the United Nations. I threw rallies in front of the White House. I created the largest network of internet sites on earth by far. I gave Michael Jackson the song Beat It. I told John Denver, by the way, Beat It, which was the number one song and propelled Thriller to be the number one selling album of all time. And it was just by coincidence. Go and read the story. It's at michaeljackson.net. It'll still be up for a few days. Or John Denver, when I met him in my taxi, what an unbelievable story. And I told him, you have to go over to Russia and play your music. And what did John Denver do? He did. And the story at john-denver.com, go read it. And the strangeness about the whole thing. And he died the same day off the point, Lovers Point Park in Pacific Grove, California, where I've been to many times. It's maybe the highest place on this planet I've ever been to. And I asked John Denver to go to my rally in front of the White House on October 12th, 1997. And he very nicely told me, I can't, Mark. No, thank you. Because he wanted to be one of the first people in space. And so he couldn't go against NASA, the rallies were against Cassini, I'm not against unmanned space missions, but it happened to carry 72.3 pounds of plutonium when they could have done it with solar power. And so I was rallying against it. But he on the same day that I asked him to be at this rally in front of the White House, he's in the highest point I am on the planet and dies 200 feet off of it the same day. And I just, till this moment in time, it's like, wow, how does that happen? So here I am just doing everything possible in every different way. And it's like magical. When I was there 3 weeks before John Lennon was assassinated, I was in my local bar, the Gaslight in Elmhurst, Queens, and I blurted out in front of all my friends, John Lennon's going to be assassinated. They're going to blame it on a lone, crazy, deranged fan, and he'll never go to trial. I was driving my taxi that night while I was going to university, and when Vince Scalzo on WFM 102.7 gave the news that John shot and then John died, and I went to the Dakota and parked my taxi right in front of the Dakota. It double parked, and kneeled down and swore in his blood, I'm going to change the world. And I was there for 9 hours. And that's the night I took the gloves off. I said, that's it. I'm going to fear no man anymore. Nothing. And I'll tell you, the resignation in people's faces, you know, coming up at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, because I was there from 11:45 at night to 8:45 in the morning. I was there for 9 hours. And it was just the most amazing thing. The resignations in people's faces saying, oh, my God, it's over. And this is December 8th, and then December 9th, 1980. So it's and from that, I did, you know, all of a sudden, within a year and a half, within a year, I met Michael Jackson, and then I meet John Denver. And then all these other things that I've done in my life have come out of this. That I have no fear. It doesn't matter if they tap my phone, they follow me around. It's all this stuff, or attack me. You know, it's like, you know, fast forward now past 9/11 when I did, and you go to when I started learning about World War II through people, you know, such as yourself, bless you, and I picked out on purpose Rudolf Hess, and I did. And it was funny. I finished it the same day that David Irving was a guest in my home, and was like, I just found the coincidence once again, just amazing. But I picked that and I published it on his 25th anniversary of his suicidedness. Huh? Is a new word,
right?
And it's still, we don't get to the bottom of that, you know. But I picked him out on purpose because, you know, here's this big bad Nazi. Going to bring peace to England. And so I was trying to break through. I was trying to get my foot in the door with people, their consciousness, and saying, wait a second, something doesn't jive with this story. What's wrong? So, and people, you know, and that was number two in Google since I put it out. All my work were on top level domain names. They were all number one, two, three, or four in Google until, you know, March of 2017. So I picked up Rudolf Hess, and that led me on to, and that was the first piece I wrote in 7.5 years, because my mom was dying and I took care of her. And in the interim, I did my film, which took years, Strawberry Fields. And so I then went on and started writing Holocaust Revisionism. And what I did was I said, let me bring forth all the people, all the Holocaust revisionists that have come before me, bring all, put their, all of their information that they've came out to be found, you know, found out to be true, and put it all together under one umbrella. This idea came from me because I saw the late Robert Farrisahn say we need an people should get together and create an encyclopedia of this. I said, well, I'll do it, and it took me a long time. And it's like, what, it was like 170 pages or whatever it was, and now it's over 200 pages. And I brought together, you know, 50 sections repudiating the Holocaust. And then I said, oh, my God, I better write a history of the Jews, because these, you know, people might think this is just a one-off occurrence, that they're just lying about this. And I wrote like a 108-page paper, part of Holocaust Revisionism, called History of the Jews, and things that I didn't know, of course. You know, I just knew a lot about the last 125 years or so. Not about the Romans and, you know, on and on and on throughout 3,300 years of their history. They've had this misanthropic behavior, this aberrant behavior. that we can't seem to change. No matter what we do, it doesn't stop them. And so, and I was about to publish, and it's still online, holocaustrevisionism.com, and my sister, who's very Jew-wise, said, don't do it. And at this time, on top of the world, pretty much. Not that I was, I just actually, not really on top of the world, but financially, I owned 4,000 domain names, probably worth around $10 million, $12 million. And I said, I took 3 weeks, because my sister said, don't do it, they're going to get you. You know they're going to get you. You know what happens to people, and you've just put out the best of everybody's work together under one umbrella, and they're going to come get you. And I said, well, and I decided after 3 weeks, I went back and forth, and I said, who would I be if I didn't publish this? Who would I be? I said, what am I fearing? There's nothing to fear. And right away, I put it out, and I went on your show, and what happened was I have my own server. I have, you know, 1,000 websites up on that server of my network, Love Earth Network. And what did they do? They just went after one website where I make my money, godsdomains.com. And they took it down in the most sophisticated way that my webmaster, who used to own his own ISP, said, I've never seen anything like this. They took it down for 9 days. We put it up, it came down, up, down. I've never seen, and so it was the only one. They didn't touch any other website, just the one I make money on. And ever since then, for the last 6.5 years almost now, I can go on and on about how they've attacked me. The games that they've played just financially with me to bring me down from being worth more than $10 million to the point where right now I'm totally broke. And I, for the first time in my life, 5 days ago, I put out an email, said, please help me. And I laid it all out. I said, you know, people are always begging for money, and they have one website. Well, look what I've done. And it's not about the ego. It's look what I've done. I walked the walk. I spent almost $1 million of my own money creating this network. I never asked anybody for money while I was developing this network. And I just did it. And so now that I've been attacked relentlessly, and it just happened. The last one just happened 1.5 weeks ago. And matter of fact, just 1 week ago today, for the first time in 24 years of being online with my own computer at home, they got into my computer, and they're in it now. They hacked in. And it's like, I reach out to people, and I say, please help me. And here's the really sad thing. Nobody helps me. You, Deanna, are one of the few people that I respect and I have love for. And you've helped me in the past, and you helped me now by letting me have an hour on your show again to put this forth. And I'm in deep water. I'm going to lose everything. The network will go down. I'm lucky I'm still online. My bill is 9 days overdue for my internet right now. I just defaulted on another bill. I'm 3 days behind on my rent. I literally have no money. So if people want to help, please help me today. You can do it by PayPal. My email address at PayPal is Mark, M-A-R-K, at eimagine.net. So it's M-A-R-K at eimagine.net. Mark at eimagine.net. Yeah, it comes from John Lennon. And so if you can help, please do. I still, by the way, I still own 1,345 domain names. And not only that, the major reason why I'm going down is because of these attacks that have been relentless. But it's not the whole reason, huh? And it's not like I'm a bad businessman. I've been doing this more than 22 years. It is the economy also. I'm not going to lay blame totally on the Jews, but it is. I mean, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be in this boat. That's for sure. but it's also, and I think they're playing much more sophisticated games with me this year. And what that is I think they're blocking my emails, because I never went more than like 2 weeks without an inquiry, and that was like crazy. I just went 43 days without an inquiry on my business. And so it's impossible that this is happening. And what I find truly impossible, and I, by the way, somebody, some really wonderful older gentleman came forth and said, Mark, I'm going to PayPal you $700 Tuesday, he said. And it didn't happen. And Wednesday and Thursday. And he says, I'm having a problem with PayPal. He's an older gentleman. And I said, okay. I said, why don't you wire it into my account? I needed it 4 days ago. I needed it on the 16th when my internet bill was due. And he just told me last night that he can't do it. Or early this morning, actually. And so I went to him and I said, why, you've been, by the way, he's been through the same kind of thing, being attacked by the Jews. And I said, why would you ever put forth that you were going to help and then not come through? And I did a lot of research and work for this gentleman. And so I find I have like, you know, I used to have 10, way more than 10,000 people on my email list, and I cut it down to less than 300. And I'll tell you, I put out two pleas to please help me. The second one was sarcasm, but with love. I said, you know, thank you for your generosity, da, 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 da. I made it look like people were helping. Two people helped me. An old friend that I've known for forever, who I haven't even heard from in 9 years. He was actually a very good friend of my second wife, the ballerina from Montreal. And a friend, another friend up in Canada that sent me $50 and $20, of which I get less than, you know, so I put this other email out and I get two more people. So out of all these hundreds of people that know me on my email list, four people have come forth and very few people even came, and family, by the way, I have family on this, on my email, a few different family members still that I, and my best friend, bless his soul, hasn't even come back. So I'm like, boy, it's like Judas is everywhere, or that's what it almost feels like to me. So I put my, and you know, I put my neck on the guillotine with 9/11, and people ran from me. I knew people all in New York and media and stuff. They all ran like little girls. And I put out, I did it for 2 years, huh? I put out three major pieces and two minor pieces on 9/11. I'm like the godfather of 9/11, or so I've been called by the master list, which is the list of all lists of this guy's called me on 9/11. And probably rightly so. And you know, it's so, and I put my neck on the guillotine again with Holocaust revisionism. And now, finally, I'm paying the price for it. And here I am about to be thrown out on the street. And no one seems to care. And I know, look, I know it's really hard for a lot of people. And you know, and I just recently, by the way, I had a conversation with somebody and sort of got closer to somebody. And when they realized what my predicament is, they've not returned. I don't know if it's fear. I don't know what it is. Do they think I'm a braggart or something? A braggarty? I don't know. I just say what I did. Or maybe they feel inferior. Because look what I've done and look what you've done. Or look what everybody's done is what I could say, but I don't. What have you done to change this world? We are about to go extinct as a species. And people are saying, let me have another beer and watch the football game. It is... Here's another poem that I put out. I put out on its own website, I own saviorofhumanity.com. And I wrote this on November 19th, 1981. It's called Savior of Humanity. With a beautiful life given us, a paradise for humans to run, live forever or turn to dust, whatever happens It's what we've done. And now that we have reached the time to choose our destiny, global unity, I do preach, love the Savior of humanity. And that's why you see me in all my emails, love is the answer. And I'll tell you another thing, behind the scenes of all my writings, what I sent, I'm about to send it out, a third plea. And you know, I even know through my best online friend who was assassinated, murdered in his own home on November 6th last year in St. Croix. I love you, Mark. Mark Raffis. So I lost him. I lost my father's, my best friend's father. And I lost my father. By the way, my best friend's father, of 43 years, my best friend from New York. And he lives 3 kilometers south of me now. And my father both died on the same day, November 16th, 2018. And I did the math for it. I think it was 1.3 million, one in 1.3 million chance for this to happen. And so this is the kind of stuff that's happened to me all along now. But people think, oh, this guy's nuts. There's study about rainforests. There's study about overpopulation. There's Holocaust revision, or there's 9/11. But everything I've turned out to, or giving Michael Jackson the song "Beat It," give me a break, or telling John Denver to go play new music, or throwing rallies in front of the United Nations and the White House, and running somebody for president of the United States. Yeah, I've done it. Yeah, I saw. By the way, John Lennon. I told all my best friends before it happened. Okay. Here's the weird thing. That's not weird enough. Of course, John Lennon's assassinated 3 weeks later, 3 weeks before I said he was going to be. And then they blame it on a lone crazy deranged fan. And by the way, 6 months later, Chapman never goes to trial because he pleads guilty all of a sudden. He heard, quote unquote, a small male voice in his head. And he pleaded guilty, so there's no trial. Just like there was no trial in 9/11. And I wrote, by the way, 9/11 trial. Go take a look at it, 911trial.com, where you can for a few days if it's still up. It's still up now. And you see, for $6.4 million, I could create a new trial for 9/11. They'll never have a trial. My work was used in the first federal lawsuit in this country on 9/11. Her name was Ellen Mariana. Her husband died on Fight 175. She used my work. And I'm so proud of that. But I knew, after 2 years of research in 9/11, they're never going to have a trial. They're not going to let it happen. And so I came up 13 years later with 9/11 trial. And I spent weeks and weeks and weeks researching all sorts of different things and money and to create a trial to bring the truth forward and to stream it out and have a documentary about it and let the world decide and a real trial. Courtroom, jury, judge, four lawyers each, 108 people from both sides being able to be witness and cross-examined. I mean, legally, and I'd bend over backwards to try to show the government's case if they didn't want to do it. I would make it as fair as possible. Of course, we all know Israel did it, huh? And there'll never be a trial because the freaking Jews paid off everybody. So, I sidestep it. I come up with a solution. And you know what? One of the top people in the world said to me, "You're dead." That's how good that solution is. I said, "Yeah, the rest of the people don't even give a damn. They'll just rather go around saying, oh, is it a particle beam, or is it nanothermite, or is it this, or is it that?" And they'll argue amongst themselves instead of let's come to the freaking answer and solution of it. I'm a solution-oriented person. I see a problem. It's like John Lennon. There are no problems. There are only solutions. That's the way I see life. And by the way, so back to Lennon. I walk into my local bar 4 days later. It's December 12th, 1980. By the way, John Lennon already had bought his plane tickets to go out to San Francisco, actually Oakland, to be at his first rally, his first political rally in 8 years. And he was, by the way, he was assassinated during this lame duck, huh? Carter loses to Reagan. He's now a lame duck. Lennon's assassinated during this lame duck presidency.
Wow.
And what you have is John Lennon not only was coming out, just put out his first album in over five years, which was up the charts, and he was coming out with political rallies. He was also had in the works, and nobody knows this, that he was in the works of putting together a world tour. They had to take him out. And it's so these things. So I walk into my bar 4 days later, and my friends, who I told 3.5 weeks or so before that John Lennon's going to be assassinated, and he was 4 days earlier, they come up to me as soon as I come in the door. And I had really eclectic. We're all from middle class backgrounds. And the one, you know, one made it to a CFO of a major corporation. Another one's an Ivy League eye doctor. Another one is VP for Columbia Pictures. Another one's a window washer. Another guy is a sanitation worker. We were all, you know, some of us really made it. Some of us were just regular guys. But I walked in and they all started like almost attacking me, mocking me, because they were so full of fear. How does Mark know this stuff? And so I put my hands out like Jesus Christ. And I said this, and it wasn't me saying it. I said, just to prove John Lennon was a prophet for peace, New York City's going to have the coldest Christmas ever on record. And that's all I said. And 13 days later, December 25th, 1980, New York City had the coldest Christmas ever on record, 1 degree below zero. I'd never forget it because I took a taxi into Manhattan to visit my new girlfriend, who lived in a beautiful place. Anyway, and later on, one of these friends came up to me who was, turned out he died 2 years ago because I told him not to work for Goldman Sachs. Don't work for these people. And he died of cancer. But he came up to me and he said, Mark, you know, you told us 3 weeks before John was assassinated that he was going to be assassinated. He was. Then you walked into the bar that night, a few days later, huh? And we're all mocking you, and you came out like you were Jesus Christ. And he goes, that's not you, and that wasn't you speaking. And he goes, who the F are you? And I went, I'm here for the survival of our species. It's like when John Denver got into my taxi. I was outside Studio 54 at like 4:30 in the morning. I was the third taxi in line. And I see John Denver coming out of Studio 54 with an armful of albums. And I said, dear Lord, let him come in my taxi, please. And this never happened. I drove a taxi for almost 10 years in New York. To be a third in line, and the person skips the first two taxis, John Denver looks at the first taxi, looks at the second taxi, and gets into my taxi. So I turn around. He goes, I'm going to Carlisle. I turn around. I go, hey, you're John Denver. That's Studio 54. It's 4:30 in the morning. You just blew your Rocky Mountain high, buddy. And he started laughing. He goes, who are you? And I actually remembered the exact quote. I said, I'm a mad Irish poet here to save our species. And he went, and he looked at me, he looked at my hair class, and he goes, you're Mark. And he goes, I go, yeah. And I started driving up. I actually said, do you know that President Kennedy had the 34th floor, and it used to be called the New York White House at the Carlisle. And he goes, yeah, I did know that, Mark. And then he goes, you know, I just came back from Japan, and they fed everything into the fastest supercomputer. And this is like 1981, 82, I think. And he said that they put everything of the information about carrying capacity into the fastest supercomputer, and they came out to the year 2036. That's when we're going to reach Omega Point. And that'll be the line in the sand where we cross over, we become irreversible. So and so we started talking about Mother Earth, and I pull up to the Carlisle, and we sat there for over an hour, and I'm talking with John Denver, who at that time was, and that's when I told him, I said, you're one of the highest beings on this planet. John Lennon was just whacked, and I said, you have to show people that we're all the same. You, please go over to Russia, or at that time the Soviet Union, and play your music there, and tell them we're all the same. It's just the governments that are dividing us. And he did. And so when I told you later what happened, he died. You know, or did he die? You know, I've looked into his death. Very strange, exceedingly strange, and hit home for me. Because exactly where I told you where the point it was, it's the highest point on the planet, perhaps for me, is Lover's Point Park, and he dies 200 feet off of it. Which wow. How can this be? So my life has been full of all of this. And for me to be in this predicament that I'm in now, I'm saying, what is it? What is it about? I've done my best. You know, and I have some, and by the way, if For the last 6.5 years, I've been working on a project. And it's the greatest project of my life by far. It is the culmination of my life's work. And it's called Love Communities. And I'm within about 5 or 6 weeks of not finishing it, but to be able to finish it enough to put it online. And it is the most ambitious thing. You think creating the largest network of internet sites with over a thousand websites was significant. I have this project, and I'm telling you, without ego, that this may be the greatest group of solutions to possibly avert our extinction. And what I'm telling you is, I may have the answer to stop our extinction. This has been my life's work. It's been given to me. It's been because I've dwelled in all of these different areas, I've gotten the solutions. Like Dr. Rupert Sheldrake says, the morphic field. Who, by the way, I've been in contact for a few years with Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, who's the top heretic scientist of the planet. I feel very honored to have conversations. Anyway, but I've gotten all of these solutions, and I'm telling you, like, you throw a dart, between 5 and 10 of them are top level, and they haven't been done yet. And they're totally non-confrontational. It's just beyond belief ideas, solutions that have been given to me. And I put them all together. I've been working on this for 6.5 years behind the scenes, doing all this other stuff, yet working on this. And I'm telling you, I don't think there's a better solution to avert our extinction that anybody on the planet has. So if you want to help, screw everything I've done. Look what I'm about to do. You want me to go down? I'll go down. I'm not going to go down without fighting and without telling you. We are about to go extinct as a species. And I possibly have the greatest group of solutions to avert that. And it's sitting here within 6 weeks of being put online. And I'm about to be thrown out on my ass. And by the way, I still own 1,345 domain names. Anybody want one? And really good names. Some of them, 250 of them or so, are excellent names. Like, I have one up on a major auction right now, geneticallyengineered.com.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, I'm freaking out. Highestpriority.com. Hey, I just bought Howard-News.com because I like Howard. And let me tell you, Deanna, to the audience, this lady is beautiful. She's been a friend for more than 6 years. She is a loving, giving, beautiful woman. Thank you, Deanna. Bless you.
Thank you, and bless you. Take care. Speak with you next week. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Mark. Love you. Bye.
Media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at libertystickers.com. Again, that's libertystickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to the Republic.